Today's gospel, just like last week's gospel, is taken from Luke's sermon, Jesus' sermon on the plains, where last week Jesus outlined who is blessed. Several theologians see this particular passage as advocating nonviolent resistance. The teaching here is not to be passive in the face of oppression, but to use nonviolence to resist evil. As a peacemaker, Jesus wants to break down the cycles of violence by refusing to cooperate with the violence. Violence in response to violence only leads to further violence. As Gandhi said, "An eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind." The goal here is to lead one's opponents to change of heart, to melt their hearts, win them over, to stop the violence, and help others discover God's reign of love and peace. As I said last week for Luke, Jesus promises a world turned upside down, from the poor lifted up and the mighty cast down in the Magnificat, to the captives released, to the reviled who are the blessed, and today through nonviolent resistance. Like every good teacher, Jesus gives concrete examples of how to do this. Today he outlines strategies of nonviolent resistance for the Jewish people of his time in challenging structures of power. During the time of Jesus, the Jewish homeland was occupied territory of the Roman Empire by a Roman military presence. So in today's passage, the first example he gives us is when someone slaps you, turn the other cheek. Turning the other cheek is a way of responding to an aggressor without violence. As theologian Walter Wink says, a right-handed blow in a right-handed world would land on the left cheek. To strike the right cheek with a fist would require the left hand. But the left hand was only used for unclean work. Someone could be punished for using a left hand, even in slapping someone. The only way to strike someone's cheek with your right hand would have been with the back of the hand. Jesus there is describing an insult, not a fist fight. He's talking about the violent humiliation of slave owner or Roman soldier toward the oppressed people of Galilee, in which the oppressor uses their power to humiliate. Turning the other cheek in the face of such humiliation would stop the oppressor and assert one's own dignity, equality, and humanity. It would put the oppressed on equal footing, as Wink explains. It says to the offender, "I deny you the power to humiliate me." Moreover, by turning the other cheek, the person who is slapped has to actually look the aggressor in the eye as the head is turned from one side to the other, again asserting dignity. The second example he has here is, if anyone takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. In Jesus' time, as in ours, the poor were forever in debt. People wore outer and inner garments. Wink writes, in the time of Jesus, if folks were actually hauled into court and sued for their clothing right off their backs, only the poorest, those Jesus addressed, would have nothing but an outer garment to give. So when they demanded your outer garment, he says, give them your inner garment as well. If a poor person was sued in court for his outer garment and gave away his inner garment too, he would be standing naked before the court, which was not only a taboo, but it was a criminal act, but not as you might assume. However, it's not the naked person who's the criminal. The crime is that it was illegal to look upon a naked person. Jesus' audience would immediately realize that the judge and the soldiers would have violated the law, and the poor naked person would have to be let go free because those in the court looked upon their nakedness. Jesus teaches the oppressed not to be awed by power, but to respond creatively, disarm opponents with nonviolently liberation of self, Jesus offers, in Wink's words, a practical strategic measure for empowering the oppressed. The third example in this gospel passage, Jesus calls those following him to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The golden rule is a powerful nonviolent strategy. When someone who is injured responds in a loving way rather than in retaliation, it can disarm an opponent because it's totally unexpected. Most people expect an attack with an attack response. It is why, years ago, when I joined the protesters who kept yelling "faggot" at me, instead of challenging them and arguing in 1997, it completely disarmed them. Just standing with them and loving them was too much for them, and they left quietly. I shared at length this story before, so I won't repeat it again here. Our fourth example, lend, expecting nothing in return. He says next, instead of making money for yourself, Jesus teaches us to give to those in need. Be generous, selfless givers. Jesus counsels his hearers not to give alms and lend money, even not just to give alms and lend money, even to bad risks, but to lend without expecting interest or even a return on the principal. Creating a more equal systems for all people itself is a form of nonviolent resistance because it levels the playing field and more broadly shares the power in a culture. Again, it is totally unexpected and is a powerful witness. If we applied this gospel economic socially and globally, we would end hoarding, return resources stolen from the poor through systems whereby wealth is achieved. We could feed the hungry, house the homeless, heal the sick, and never turn our backs on anyone. We would look one another in the eye, treat everyone with respect and dignity, and reclaim our common humanity. These examples show us how to use nonviolent resistance in the face of violence and imperial oppression. But besides teaching such an exciting alternative to violence, Jesus shows us how to do this in his own life. Jesus was never passive, nor did he retaliate with violence. Even standing before Pilate, he engaged in nonviolent action. After they killed him, he continued his creative resistance. Resurrection is the ultimate example of nonviolent resistance to an empire of violence and death. Nonviolent resistance is a powerful force for change. However, many have dismissed it, saying it may have worked before, or like in India with the independence movement, but has no real track record. And they would be wrong. From the time of Christ, nonviolent resistance has changed the world. For example, American colonists mounted 3 nonviolent resistance campaigns against British rule. The Stamp Act of 1765, the Townshend Act, and the Coercive Acts of 1774 paved the way for American independence. Nonviolent demonstrations for women's suffrages by leaders such as Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Frederick Douglass led to the passage and ratification of the constitutional amendment guaranteeing the women the right to vote. Some of the people we admire most use nonviolent resistance to change the world. People like Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, or Bobby Kennedy are held up as models for human rights through nonviolence. There is a silver lining in our current cultural moment. It is that all of us are compelled to experience more deeply the needs of our fellow countrymen and women who do not enjoy many of the privileges we can take for granted. We are compelled in our national situation of division and discord to look in the mirror and ask, where do I stand in relation to the pressing issues of our day? We are seeing the impact recent nonviolent responses are having on systems of abuse, power, and violence. Think of Black Lives Matter, the Me Too movement, or the Sanctuary movement for refugees. These are nonviolent responses to resist policies rooted in violence and power. People across the country are having to rethink where they stand on a host of issues once thought non-issues, settled issues, or the status quo. I want to end this morning by sharing another personal story of my friend David Duncombe, who was a UCC minister who lived with Art and me in DC while he was on a hunger strike to reduce third world debt. Knowing David had done hunger strikes before, I asked him how he got started. Many years ago, when he was much younger, he was one of those protesting against the Vietnam War using nonviolent resistance and was arrested. I can't remember exactly what he did, but he wound up in prison. While David was serving his time, he observed the extraordinary violence of inmates against each other. It was then that he came up with a strategy to improve things and turn things around. He used a personal hunger strike to make a point. He was going on a fast until the violence in prison subsided. David would appear in the dining hall every day, but he did not eat. Word soon spread throughout the prison that this minister was on a hunger strike to reduce violence in prison. Ever so slowly, David started to notice changes, first for himself. He found other prisoners opening doors or assisting him as he grew weaker. Then the change became more dramatic. Groups in the prison who were sworn enemies declared a truce, and things quieted down significantly. So David was able to end his fast. He succeeded using his body as a witness for love and peace. In today's gospel, Jesus invites us to resist evil with active nonviolence, to stand our ground, speak the truth, insist on our common humanity, disarm our opponent, risk suffering loss, trust in God, and work for the conversion of our opponents. Advancing God's kingdom requires us to challenge systems that support injustice and transform those systems into justice for all. The weapon Jesus invites us to carry into these nonviolent battles is the only thing that really can affect change, and that is love. Jesus tells us to love our enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you. So this day I invite you and myself to simply do it. Amen.